Welcome to another episode of 247 Real Talk Podcast. I'm your host, Julian Perry, and it's a pleasure to be here with you. On this evening's episode, I'm going to talk a bit about uncovering the true heartbreaking tragedy behind the Tyre Nichols story. So sit back, relax, and I'll be right back with you. Here we go. Good evening, all folks out there. Thank you so much for joining me again in another episode of the 247 Real Talk Podcast. As I said, I'm your host, Julian Perry. It's a pleasure to be here with you again. As many of you know, I record in the evenings, sometimes during the week, and my episodes air on Friday mornings around 1 a.m., both in audio and on YouTube. So I try not to make these too long. On this episode, I'm going to speak with you again about what's going on in terms of the Tyre Nichols story. Not from the perspective of what we've heard out there, because we've heard about this tragedy. We've heard all the perspectives that are reoccurring. And maybe my perspective is fresh, new, controversial, different. But I wanted to come at it from a point of human beings, us as minorities, and what we keep accepting and what needs to stop. You know, it is strange that whenever these tragedies occur, we are able to gather thousands in various states, and we regardless of where it happens, we protest, we go out, and we make our voices heard. And unfortunately, in many cases, you know, there are times when things turn violent. I understand the anger, and I want to try to do the best I can to explain this, my perspective, in the least controversial way, but in the most effective way. I've said before in many of my podcasts, and if you look back and you go through different episodes, you'll hear me speak about how important it is for all our minorities to join together, how important it is for us to understand that a lot of decisions are being made for us because we fail to have the kind of unity that represents our true power in the numbers that we have. I don't know about you, but I am tired of these scenarios, of watching laws never change, of watching people who are sworn to serve and protect us beat us to death. Shoot us to death, put their knees in our necks till we die. And it is great to hear politicians get up and say, oh, I'm going to introduce a law. But all I see that as for me personally is grandstanding. Things that are against humanity that take lives should not be something that has to go to a law and go through Congress and go through debates and actually have people that go against what is right and what is humane. Whether we have races, creeds, and colors that hate each other. The fact is, we were all created as humans equally. If you look at our physical structures, if you look at what's within our bodies, we are exactly the same. It is the outer layer that causes so much pain for so many minorities. And we have now been set to a level of pawns in the game of life. Whenever we get someone who manages to rise up through the ranks and then, you know, is seen by those with power, those in Washington, I'm talking about our entire base of politicians, the games they play with our lives. You know, they're even our current president, I'm sorry to say, you know, you lift up a Supreme Court judge or someone else and they make that scene that they've done so much for the minority race. But the fact of the matter is, we've gone through, there's so many of us that have gone through so much suffering for so long that one or two or three people don't cut it. I often make the analogy that if you take a bowl and you pour it and you cover the bottom of the bowl with salt, and then you get some black pepper and you just tap it and get a little sprinkle, that's what it looks like. That's what we look like in our society. And the fact of the matter is this. We have the brains, we have the power, but we don't use it. I am tired of seeing funerals for more and more minorities attended by more and more families who have lost their sons and daughters and husbands and wives to something that we call a tragedy. It's not a tragedy. It's murder. Plain and simple. Breonna Taylor. I've lost track of the names. And here we are, you know, and people want to say, and I hate it. It turns me into such a state of infuriation when I hear people online talk about, well, you know, he shouldn't have run. He shouldn't have, you know. Let me say this clearly to all who listen, and whether you like it or not. We have an inherent human part of us that says, since childhood, if I'm a kid and I'm not supposed to eat a cookie and I take a cookie and I know I'm doing something wrong, mommy's coming, I'm going to run or hide, you know, so she can't catch me. Whatever we do, if we have not done anything violent, if we have not threatened a life, and even if for the moment we've made a bad decision, or we just in fear, then the actions taken against us, if indeed there is felt that we need to be held, detained, or whatever, should be equal to the actions we took. I've often heard people say, you know, even in the case of police officers at times, that, oh, I think he was in fear for his life. Well, how do they think we feel? I'm wondering, I was thinking tonight, I remember being at a nightclub years ago and watching patrons come out of the nightclub and then get into a fight with security. And security guys were large. I remember the fists that flew. Some patrons were overcome and they were trying to hover and cover themselves. And I can distinctly hear that sound of a bare fist hitting a bare body. The thud is nothing like you've ever heard. And to watch, even in the Tyre Nichols case, where even after he was down the ground, him getting kicked, officers arriving after the fact he's down the ground and kicking him, is another part of this episode I'm going to come to in a second, because like I said, I don't want to keep it too long. But the first part of the tragedy is we fail to unite. You know, have you ever thought about all these products out there that we fancy, that we as minorities put importance on, that we go out and we purchase? Have you ever done the footwork and the research to find out who stands at the top of the companies? Could you just imagine if we started supporting some minority entrepreneurs who make sneakers, who make jeans, who make this, who make that. And our money started going towards their creativity. Could you imagine what would happen to those companies? Do you honestly think that all these companies that make millions of dollars from our spending and then give it to our Washington, D.C. so-called politicians who make laws against us or refuse to make laws for us? Do you know what an impact we would make collectively as one? You know, some time ago, I remember being infuriated again by a vote that was taken up in Congress making the Emmett Till law a federal law. That was the lynching, making lynching a federal crime, I think punishable by death. Do you know, out of all of Congress, there were three Republican politicians who voted against it? Here's my problem. In my episode, and I focused specifically on that, I called out to my listeners to write letters, to somehow find a way to write a story about it, to write a few lines on your Facebook, your social media, use that for empowerment. Because I have not heard anyone question those three politicians. I have not heard them being held accountable to their constituents. Not only their constituents, but they're part of the United States government, so they have accountability beyond the states they represent. They have accountability to all of us. Imagine a man, Black Emmett Till, who was hung, and almost all the Congress felt that this was such an egregious, a most vicious crime that it must be a federal hate crime. And here we have three politicians who said, nah, I don't think so. I won't support that. And we let it go. But, you know, I understand what's happening in a sense. Look at what we're doing as minorities. We are struggling for survival. Each and every day we are struggling for survival. And as a result of struggling for that survival, we are distracted by what's really going on around us and really being done to us. They have won the battle of making us so indulged by the need to pay the bill, to take care of the child, to find a way to live, to find a way to move up, to find a piece of the American dream, to find, student loans. All these things they've held against us. Imagine the United States is giving trillions of dollars. It's got to be over a trillion now to Ukraine. Imagine I've heard, and don't quote me on this because this is what I heard. I haven't validated it yet, but I heard someone from Ukraine right now can come into the United States and pretty much, get a ticket towards working and certain benefits from our society that Americans probably can't get that easily. Yet we say to them, you have a system that our current president has acknowledged is riddled with systemic racism. He has acknowledged that the weight has been against us, and our backs have been against the walls for so long as minorities, that something has to be done. Yet, the same exact Congress, the same exact politicians that we elect, several of them are against forgiveness of student loans, something that is punishing minorities. I have a friend of mine who is a staunch supporter of this podcast, and he often laughs and tells me I managed to find a way to work student loans into it one way or the other. But this is a serious issue, and it's one of the oppressive things that are going on in modern day. If you really dissect that entire mechanism of student loans, you'll see how unfair it is to minorities and how targeted it is to continue to draw every cent that we make and take it away from us. It makes sure that we stay in our place. And this is the same thing that's happening when we see situations like Tyre Nichols. How many more Tyre Nichols do they have to be for us to decide that we're going to take it out to the hands of the lawmakers. I'm talking about peacefully now. I'm not in this space of violence and anger. And we have to make sure that we all get that. Because when we look at what has happened in various protests when there's violence and anger, we break up our own neighborhoods. We break up the stores that our own people have worked hard to build. And it accomplishes nothing, but it makes it, you know, it destroys lives of several of our own. That is not what we're trying to do. We have to stop being opportunists. The opportunists we have to be for is for our united group. And there's a much easier way to do this. Do your research. There are a lot of minority entrepreneurs out there that are offering quality work, quality products, and struggling to get a piece of the market because it's dominated by the rich white people. Let's put it blank. By the powerful corporations. By people who don't care. By people who are filled with greed. By people who want to sell us stuff and make sure that we don't have, because as long as we don't have, we have to continue buying from them. The minute we understand, look at our history, look back enough, take the time to learn who you are, whose you are, where you've come from, and what you're capable of. The minute you understand that if we unite, if we start taking our own monies and putting it into our own communities, if we go across the borders of our states to other states and empower our own people, if we make sure that we find our businesses, we advertise our businesses, and then we seek them out to support them. And entrepreneurs and business owners, make sure you provide quality and a high level of service. Watch what happens. It was the if you ever take a real close look at it, it was the catalyst for the end of segregation. It was the catalyst of the end of segregation because there was a point where minorities could not do anything but the minority communities. And as a result, we were wealthy. And no one could get their hands on our money because we weren't allowed to. So they allowed us to. And we forgot how powerful we are. Now, I want to make sure I say this to all my audience as I look in that camera. This is not about violence. Please, we've had enough of that. This is about simply making sure that we stand up and that we're counted. This is making sure that we recognize for the value of who we are, of our qualities, and what we bring to this world, to this society. This is for people to understand that the days of oppression are still here and they're no longer tolerable or will be tolerated by us. We also have to learn to treat each other in that same regard. I understand the whole dynamic of, you know, I saw it yesterday, I think it was on someone's, was it yesterday? Yeah, yesterday was Tyre Nichols' funeral. And I saw someone make a comment that says, why is Reverend Al Sharpton talking about the act of against minorities? Why doesn't he tell minorities to stop killing minorities? I've done an episode on that too. And we can talk more about that if you want to. But the minorities, killing minorities, is not a product of minorities doing it. It did not initiate that way. It was not initiated that way. But that's a different story, and I want to make sure I don't digress because I'm sure running out of time. So we need to also understand as human beings, and that's getting back to the other part of this conversation, that hurting another human being, irrespective of race, creed, or color, hurting another human being when there's no threat to us. You know, there's a difference when someone is threatening your life or the life of your family member or something, and then you have to do something because it's sort of survival, it's you or them. Then that is a different scenario. And I think the real human being will defend themselves and then struggle for a long time to deal with what they've done, not because it was the right or wrong, but because they had to do that to another human being. This is who we were created to be. But we have so far strayed from that path. The way I see human beings hurting human beings, the way I see this Tyre Nichols laying on the ground and being beaten, the way I saw the guys outside the nightclub kicked and beaten and left in the street. We have no caring for another human being anymore. This is a bigger problem than we even understand. What human being, born of a mother and father, raised in whatever manner, it doesn't matter even if it was a tough upbringing, gets to the point where they're so unfeeling and uncaring, and they have something within them that allows them to strike another human being over and over to death? And it's not a boxing match. It's not UFC. It's not wrestling. It is just anger. It is just a need for superiority. And maybe a little bit of a mixture of the fact that they feel that they're above the law and can get away with it. But even beyond that, we are human beings. And I know that many of my responses I get will give me different scenarios, but I don't understand it. The human being that I am, I don't understand it. Hurting another human being, just the thought of it in a situation that's unprovoked makes me cringe. Life is precious. Every single one you look out there and you see, most of those people at least, have a relative, mother, father, son, daughter, cousin, aunt, whatever, who's longing to see them walk through the doors and come home for the day. Someone is looking forward to you. When you leave one destination, you go to work, there's something or someone at work waiting for you. When you leave work to go home, whether it be, even if there's no one at home, maybe there's someone along the way home who sees you going every day that's looking to see you go by. Most of us have someone, at least an acquaintance, and I'll say more of us have family and friends. And to lose someone in such a senseless manner, to watch a mother's pain as she buries a son that should be here today. He didn't shoot anyone. He didn't point a gun at anyone. He didn't put himself in a position where he received equal and opposite force. It is amazing, even more to me, and I have to say this, that we have struggled so many times over the law enforcement. Many of us have experienced law enforcement officers, and you speak with them and they respond to you. But we always feel that there you see an officer in uniform that you can approach them. And you want to feel that you can do so without fear. And many people I speak to today don't feel that's the case. There's always a hesitancy, even if you're in the perfect right of the law. Even if you want to ask directions. I have been in a scenario where, I guess about a month and a half, maybe 2 months ago, there was an incident that happened, and I happened to be the person assigned to report it. And my interaction with the officer was not pleasant. From the time I approached him and he came out of his vehicle, he immediately had that lofty attitude. And that bothered me. And that bothered me because, again, I always say this in an episode, and I know my friend doesn't like me to say it, but I have friends and families who are officers. And they are really good people. But do you know what they are beyond that and before that? They're good human beings. I make that distinction because I think when you're a good human being, deep inside, that goes with you regardless of occupation. If you have the ability to go out there in a job, especially a job that you're assigned to protect and serve, and you can hurt someone, then you are a stone throw or an application or a job away from being categorized as a criminal, just like the person you hurt. So I want you to think about what I've said. I want you to think about your opportunity to change, to make change. I want you to understand that I can't do this alone. That the voices you hear in the podcast and around the TV news and all these people who are angry about this, we can't do this alone. I want you to recognize, and I don't know how to plead, and it really takes a lot for me to try and get people to motivate, not to be angry, but not to act in anger, to be angry enough to decide to be a part of change, to unite, to start getting groups together and start looking at ways that we can support our own, to also write. You know, and it's not these days, you don't have to write a letter and put a stamp on it. You can go online, every congressman you know, and tell them of the change that you're enacting and tell them of the consequences if they don't change. These people, you know, it's funny that you and I get up every day, we struggle, we go to work. And if we don't do our job, we can get ourselves in a whole lot of trouble. But these guys go to Washington every day. And they can decide not to do their job or do it against us or not for a better good, and nothing happens. We even have a situation in New York City here where I spoke about with bail reform and the fact that we want to see things change for the betterment and the proper treatment of minorities, and at the same time make sure that the same minorities are safe. But we can't get certain people in Albany to even look at what New York City has to say. So, although that's a different story, the point is we have to make our voices heard. I remember years ago we had the Million Man March, and that was powerful in its own, just visualizing millions of people gathered together as one. Now imagine if we marched our daily lives together like that. Not 1 million, not 2 million, 40, 50 million. Making sure that we seek out each other to support each other, our businesses, our daily lives, whatever our needs are. Making sure that the first foot we put forward is a foot of kindness towards each other. Making sure that we look out for each other. Making sure that we put jealousy and envy aside. Understand that when you stand up and you climb up and you get to the next round, drop your hand down and lift your brother or sister up. Many other races and ethnicities do it. And it's time as minorities we stand together. You hear every single activist out there calling for the same thing. I've just joined this. I'm a junior in it. But it's a passion I feel enough that must happen, because change must come. I hope that you've enjoyed having this conversation with me, because I've surely enjoyed being here with you. In the body of the, if you look at this on YouTube or you see the listen to the audio version, I have my email information, the website information. Please understand, I'd love to hear from you. But I'm asking you to limit it to constructive conversation. You don't have to agree with me. What I'm trying to stay away from is the anger and vile things that people spit out there just because they disagree with opinions. You can easily tell me you disagree with my opinion and we can have a really great conversation. Not only can you learn from me, but mostly for my sake, I can learn from you. Let's do this together and be a part of change. Peaceful change, empowering change, that supports not only the minorities in this country and the world, but supports us and all people as human beings. It's been my pleasure to be here with you. This has been 247 Real Talk Podcast. I'm your host, Julian Perry. Until the next time, take care of yourselves and each other.
Mm-hmm.